From Pacifica, this is Democracy Now!
It is now concluded, on the basis of today's investigations, that the threat level should be increased, for the time being, from severe to critical. This means that their assessment is not only that an attack remains highly likely, but that a further attack may be imminent.
Britain is on critical alert, deploying thousands of soldiers to the streets following Monday's suicide blast that killed 22 people at a pop concert in Manchester. We'll go to London to speak with Tariq Ali. Then we look at the I word.
I rise today, Mr. Speaker, to call for the impeachment of the President of the United States of America for obstruction of justice.
Democratic Congressman Al Green of Texas joins us to talk about why he's drafting articles to impeach President Trump just 4 months into Trump's term. Plus, we look at how Donald Trump's budget compares to his campaign promises.
I'm not going to cut Social Security like every other Republican, and I'm not going to cut Medicare or Medicaid. Every other Republican's going to cut. And even if they wouldn't, they don't know what to do because they don't know where the money is. I do.
That was Donald Trump in 2015. Now, President Trump is proposing massive cuts to Medicaid and other programs to assist low-income citizens in order to give the rich a massive tax break and fund more military spending. We'll speak with Nobel Prize-winning economist Joe Stiglitz. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In Britain, nearly 4,000 soldiers have been deployed nationwide in the wake of a suicide bombing that killed 22 people and injured scores more at a concert in Manchester Monday night. The victims were mostly young girls and parents who'd taken their daughters to the concert by American pop star Ariana Grande. Authorities have identified the bombing suspect as Salman Abidi, a 22-year-old British man whose parents emigrated from Libya. Early this morning, police arrested three more people in Manchester as part of the investigation. ISIS has claimed responsibility for the attack. Prime Minister Theresa May has announced the threat level in the UK will be raised from severe to critical, indicating another attack may be imminent. We'll go to London for more on the bombing with political commentator, historian and activist Tariq Ali after headlines. In the United States, President Donald Trump has lawyered up, appointing attorney Mark Kasowitz to represent him in the ongoing investigation into whether the Trump campaign colluded with Russian officials to allegedly influence the 2016 election. Kasowitz has worked for Trump for over a decade. He threatened to sue the New York Times if it didn't retract an explosive story in which multiple women accused Trump of sexual harassment. Kasowitz also represents Russia's largest bank. He works at the same firm as former Senator Joe Lieberman, one of Trump's front-running candidates to lead the FBI, following Trump's firing of former FBI Director James Comey. Meanwhile, former CIA Director John Brennan testified to the House Intelligence Committee Tuesday, describing how he'd grown concerned last year about possible collusion between the Trump campaign and Russian officials who allegedly influenced the 2016 presidential election.
I encountered and am aware of information and intelligence that revealed contacts and interactions between Russian officials and U.S. persons involved in the Trump campaign that I was concerned about because of known Russian efforts to suborn such individuals. And it raised questions in my mind, again, whether or not the Russians were able to gain the cooperation of those individuals.
Former CIA Director John Brennan went on to say he was worried the Russians would lure Trump campaign officials into a, quote, treasonous path, unquote. Brennan's testimony Tuesday came as the Senate Intelligence Committee issued subpoenas for documents from two of former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn's businesses. This is committee vice chair Mark Warner.
The other two were that we issued two subpoenas to the two Michael Flynn businesses that we're aware of, Flynn Intel LLC and I think Flynn Intel Inc., both located in Alexandria, Virginia, with this specific list of documents because while we disagree with General Flynn's lawyer's interpretation of taking the Fifth, it is even more clear that a business does not have a right to take a Fifth if it's a corporation.
General Flynn himself has pleaded the Fifth and refused to comply with the Senate Intelligence Committee subpoena, demanding he turn over documents related to his meetings with Russian officials. All this comes as Trump continues his first foreign trip as president, meeting with Pope Francis at the Vatican this morning. Photos show an apparently cheery President Trump standing beside the glum-looking Pope. The White House pool report reads, quote, "The Pope did not say anything. He did not smile. We were quickly ushered out at 8:33 a.m., unquote. Pope Francis has been highly critical of Trump, once saying, quote, "A person who thinks only about building walls wherever they may be and not building bridges is not Christian," unquote. On Thursday, Trump is slated to meet with French President Emmanuel Macron and European Union officials in Brussels. A new investigation by the New York Times Magazine reveals how Trump's son-in-law and White House senior advisor Jared Kushner's companies act as neglectful and litigious landlords of low-income housing units in Baltimore. The article chronicles how Kushner companies hound low-income tenants with a barrage of lawsuits, eviction notices, and late fees, even when the tenants are in the right. Tenants also describe terrible maintenance practices, which created nearly unlivable conditions for some families. Philippines President Rodrigo Duterte has declared martial law in the region of Mindanao. This is the Philippines presidential spokesperson, Ernie Abella.
The president has called me and asked me to announce that as of 10 p.m. Manila time, he has already declared martial law for the entire island of Mindanao. As Ms. Guevara has clarified that this is possible on the grounds of existence of rebellion because of what is happening in Mindanao.
President Duterte declared indefinite martial law after militants seized control of key buildings in Marawi City, sparking a battle with the Philippines military. Duterte said the martial law would be no different than what the Philippines experienced under dictator Ferdinand Marcos. This comes as a new transcript obtained by The Intercept reveals that President Trump praised Duterte for his bloody war on drugs during their phone call in April, saying he's doing a, quote, "unbelievable job on the drug problem," unquote. More than 7,000 people have been extrajudicially killed by police or vigilantes since Duterte launched his so-called war on drugs last June. Human rights groups have accused Duterte of using the campaign as cover to kill activists and community leaders. During the call, Trump also boasted to Duterte that the U.S. has two nuclear submarines off the coast of North Korea, though Trump added, quote, "not that we want to use them at all." In news on Iraq, the U.S.-backed Iraqi military is opening an investigation into allegations of human rights violations committed by its troops fighting ISIS in Mosul. An Iraqi photographer who embedded with an elite unit of the Iraqi military has accused the forces of torturing and raping ISIS suspects in an article published by the German newspaper Der Spiegel. This comes as Air Wars says airstrikes carried out by the U.S. or Iraqi Air Force reportedly killed dozens of civilians in the Shifa neighborhood of Mosul on Sunday and Monday. And a newly declassified Pentagon audit had revealed the U.S. Army has failed to keep track of more than $1 billion worth of weapons and military equipment, including tens of thousands of assault rifles and hundreds of armored vehicles in Iraq and Kuwait. Amnesty International, who obtained the Pentagon report, said, quote, "it makes for especially sobering reading given the long history of leakage of U.S. arms to multiple armed groups committing atrocities in Iraq, including the armed group calling itself the Islamic State," unquote. Meanwhile, in Syria, Air Wars says U.S.-led coalition airstrikes near Raqqa reportedly killed up to 15 civilians, including two children, Sunday. The Syrian Observatory for Human Rights says U.S.-led airstrikes have killed 225 civilians over the past month, including 44 children. In Bahrain, security forces raided a sit-in near the home of a prominent Shia cleric, killing at least one protester and arresting over 200 more in the village of Diraz. The protesters support the cleric, Sheikh Issa Kassim, who just received a one-year suspended jail sentence over charges of corruption. He's the most prominent Shia cleric in the Sunni-ruled kingdom of Bahrain, which is also a close U.S. ally, home to the U.S. Navy's Fifth Fleet. In Tunisia, thousands of people gathered Tuesday for the funeral of a protester who was killed by police during demonstrations over jobs and economic inequality in southern Tunisia. Anwar Sakrafi died Monday after he was run over by a police truck during the demonstrations outside an oil and gas plant in Tataouine. Protesters torched two police stations following his death. Back in the United States, the Justice Department has sued Fiat Chrysler, accusing it of using illegal software to bypass emissions regulations. The EPA accused Fiat Chrysler of installing the software on more than 100,000 Ram pickup trucks, allowing the car to bypass emissions control systems and spew significantly higher levels of pollution. Another car company, Volkswagen, has admitted to using software to rig some 11 million vehicles worldwide, allowing them to emit up to 40 times more pollution than standards allow. And in Chicago, thousands of people marched Tuesday in advance of McDonald's annual shareholder meeting today, demanding a $15 minimum wage and better working conditions. Despite rain, fast food workers, home care aides, and other low-wage workers poured into the streets, holding signs reading, "McJobs cost us all." Protesters also gathered outside Amazon's annual shareholder meeting in Seattle Tuesday to demand better conditions and contracts for Amazon workers, as well as that the company stop advertising on the far-right-wing website Breitbart News. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. On Tuesday, the Trump administration unveiled its $4.1 trillion budget. The plan includes massive cuts to social programs while calling for historic increases in military spending. The budget proposes slashing $800 billion from Medicaid, nearly $200 billion from nutritional assistance programs, such as food stamps and Meals on Wheels, and more than $72 billion from disability benefits. The plan would also completely eliminate some student loan programs. It would ban undocumented immigrants from receiving support through some programs for families with children, including the child care tax credit. On Tuesday, Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont slammed Trump's budget.
This is a budget which says that if you are a member of the Trump family, you may receive a tax break of up to $4 billion. But if you are a child of a working class family, you could well lose the health insurance you currently have through the Children's Health Insurance Program and massive cuts to Medicaid. At a time when we remain the only major country on earth not to guarantee health care to all, this budget makes a bad situation worse in terms of health care. In other words, this is a budget that provides massive tax breaks for billionaires and corporate CEOs and massive cuts to programs that tens of millions of struggling Americans depend upon. When Donald Trump campaigned for president, he told the American people that he would be a different type of Republican, that he would take on the political and economic establishment, that he would stand up for working people, that he understood the pain that families all across this country were experiencing. Well, sadly, this budget exposes all of that verbiage for what it really was: just cheap and dishonest campaign rhetoric that was meant to get votes. Nothing more than that.
That was Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont. The ACLU, NAACP, and Planned Parenthood have all come out criticizing the budget. Some conservatives are also criticizing the budget. Republican Congressman Mark Meadows of North Carolina told The New York Times, meals on wheels, even for some of us who are considered to be fiscal hawks, may be a bridge too far, unquote. The budget also calls for an historic 10% increase in military spending and another $2.6 billion to further militarize the U.S.-Mexico border, including $1.6 billion to build Trump's border wall. In a rare proposed benefit for families, the budget allocates $19 billion for 6 weeks of paid parental leave for new families, a project that's been spearheaded by his daughter and senior White House advisor Ivanka Trump. The budget projects 3% economic growth, which economists say is widely unrealistic. Unlike previous presidents, Trump is unveiling his proposed budget while he's abroad. David Stockman, former budget director for President Ronald Reagan, said, quote, this budget is dead before arrival, so we might as well be out of town, unquote. Well, for more, we go to Joe Stiglitz, Nobel Prize-winning economist, Columbia University professor, chief economist for the Roosevelt Institute. He's the author of numerous books, most recently The Euro, How a Common Currency Threatens the Future of Europe. Joseph Stiglitz, welcome back to Democracy
Nice to
Now!
Be here.
Can you respond to the budget that's just been revealed?
It's like everything else. It's made up. You could say it's a collection of lies put together. It doesn't make any economic sense. I don't think anybody who's looked at it can fathom the economics. I mean, you mentioned one thing, the 3% growth rate, which is the largest deviation in estimate relative to the CBO on record. When I was chairman of the Council of Economic Advisors, we wanted to be responsible, and we always were conservative and were very careful, getting the views of everybody, wanted to make sure that our numbers were reasonable. He's made no pretense to be reasonable. In fact, what's striking is, while he assumes that there's going to be more growth, if you look at the budget, it's designed to reduce growth. He cuts out support for science, for R&D, which is the basis of productivity growth. He cuts out support for job retraining, so when people leave one job, they can be trained for the next job. He cuts out support for Pell Grants, so those who have low income can get the education so they can live up to their potential. All of these are things that will actually lower economic growth. So I would say this is not a growth budget. This is a no-growth budget. And then he has the numbers, you know, the gall to have things like, mind-bending. He says he's going to, elsewhere, he said he's going to eliminate the estate tax. And his budget says that he's going to raise several hundred billion dollars more money from an estate tax that is zeroed out. Now, you can make a statement that if we lower the estate tax a little bit, maybe people will be induced to die more, and maybe we'll get more revenue. You could make that kind of statement. But one thing you don't need a PhD is zero times any number is zero. So if you have a zero estate tax, no matter how many people are dying and how wealthy they are, you're going to get zero revenue. And remember, what he's doing, he's cutting out the estate tax that benefits 0.2% of the economy, of our society. You know, you have to have an estate of more than 10 million if you're a married couple in order to pay anything on the estate tax. And meanwhile, he's cutting benefits for ordinary Americans, education, health, as you mentioned, food, nutrition. It's not just the system of social protection that we've created, but even the bottom safety net that is catches people when they're in trouble.
Let's go to Donald Trump 2 years ago, speaking, this is May 21st, 2015, to the right-wing outlet, The Daily Signal.
I'm not going to cut Social Security like every other Republican, mm-hmm. and I'm not going to cut Medicare or Medicaid. Mm-hmm. Every other Republican's going to cut. And even if they wouldn't, they don't know what to do because they don't know where the money is. I do.
So he has said when he was campaigning, actually, he was campaigning against other Republicans when he made the point, I'm not going to cut Medicare, Medicaid, or Social Security. I mean, we had endless choices of clips to choose from. Joe Stiglitz.
He lied. He is cutting Medicaid, the largest cuts of Medicaid, even beyond what was in his repeal and replace that didn't get very far. These are even bigger Medicaid cuts. In terms of Social Security, one important part of Social Security is disability payments.
SSDI.
And, you know, that's really important. People do get disabled. They have auto accidents. They get sick. They get cancer. You know, all kinds of things that make them unable to work. They can't work. And he's cutting that. It's an important part of our Social Security, of security that people we provide as a society, as a basic system of social protection. He's cutting back on those expenditures. So all I can say is, you look at that clip. And what he's doing today is just the opposite.
So you're talking about cutting, I mean, already the proposed budget from the House was massive when it came to cuts, something like $880 billion in Medicaid cuts. He's suggesting $616 billion more, which would basically gut Medicaid.
That's right. And remember, it's not just for poor people. It's a major problem for our elderly who have to go into old age homes, hospice, you know. So it is an extraordinarily important program. Another way of seeing the massiveness of these cuts is that if you look at what we call non-defense discretionary, that is to say, you take out Social Security, you take out Medicare, and you take out military, he's proposing a 40% cut in all these programs. And remember, these programs have been cut year after year for the last 25 years under both Democrats and Republicans. So it's not like there's a lot of fat on this. These are already fairly lean. And what he's doing is just taking an axe to them, a 40% reduction. The consequence of his proposal, I don't think even he fully understands. For instance, we would lose the vote at the UN if he carried out his programs. I mean, so basically, we're saying to international—
What do you mean we'd lose the vote?
Well, because he's cutting out all support for international organizations. And if we don't pay our dues, our core dues, to the UN, we lose our vote. And they're an important source of our influence in international politics. So, you know, and this is a consequence of what he is proposing. There's no discussion of what the implications of this 40% cut in government. You know, there are some programs that can be cut. That's clear. But he hasn't gone pruning. He's taken an axe and said, oh, I can get a balanced budget if I make up numbers about growth and if I just pretend that I'm going to take a 40% cut from somewhere.
Let's go to Mick Mulvaney, director of the White House Office of Management and Budget.
I think for years and years, we've simply looked at a budget in terms of the folks who are on the back end of the programs, the recipients of the taxpayer money. And we haven't spent nearly enough time focusing our attention on the people who pay the taxes.
Mick Mulvaney, your response, just a glance.
Oh, totally wrong. I mean, I was in the White House for 4 years, and we did a very, very careful analysis of the benefits and costs, how it would affect taxpayers, ordinary consumers, the rich, the poor, the middle class. When we evaluated the program, we were very, very aware that this was money that people had worked for and earned, and that, on the other hand, they need help in a whole variety of areas, help in sending their kids to college, in buying a home, you know.
This would drastically shrink a low-income student loan program.
Oh, some of the programs would be wiped out. So, you know, American Dream, we've gradually understood, is really a myth, the fact that anybody can go from the bottom to the top. This is what is remnant of that American Dream. He's saying, I'm going to hit it with a sledgehammer.
Under Trump's budget, the Environmental Protection Agency faces a 31% cut, the steepest cut of any agency or department across the government. Well, during a press conference on Tuesday, a reporter asked White House Budget Director Mick Mulvaney about the EPA cuts.
Can you characterize the treatment of climate science programs and the cuts to those? And do you describe those as a taxpayer waste if you do cut them?
You tell me. I think the National Science Foundation last year used your taxpayer money to fund a climate change musical. Do you think that's a waste of your money?
What about climate science?
I'll take that as a yes, by the way.
There's Mick Mulvaney, Joe Stiglitz.
Well, you know, of course, every government program has the worst thing. The financial sector, the private sector makes a mistake. Remember, we had a crisis in 2008 that was a misallocation of trillions of dollars. So I don't want to pretend that every program is perfect, but if you get rid of environmental protection, we're going to be suffering from dirty air, dirty water, toxic waste that lower our health. And here's the point. He wants faster economic growth. A less healthy America is not going to be as productive.
And the massive increase in military spending. I mean, you've written books about this, about the wars and what they cost us.
That's right. And we're fighting now, you might say, a war on terrorism. But another aircraft carrier is not going to win on help us in the war on terrorism. You know, the Cold War, that fight with Russia in the form that it was, ended a quarter century ago, and yet we're spending money as if it hasn't ended. So we've been spending a lot of money on weapons that don't work against enemies that don't exist. If he used that criteria that he said for shutting down a department, the Defense Department would have been shut down long ago. You know, the $1,000 toilet, the hammers that cost $100 or things like that. If we use the criteria of misspending, the Defense Department is illustration number one.
So we just have a minute right now. Republicans have joined with Democrats in condemning this, saying that this budget is dead on arrival. He has it released when he's out of town. What actually happens here? You were a chief economic advisor in a White House under President Clinton. What happens next? What happens to this budget?
Well, actually, the House Budget Committee starts putting together their own budget. You know, this will be a little bit in their background. It will give a little bit of impetus to the extremist. You know, it's so ironic. He's talking about Islamic extremists while he's in Saudi Arabia. And here we have budget extremists back home, really extremist. So it is giving a license for that kind of extremism and in thinking about the social fabric in our country. But they will go ahead on their own and try to structure. The House, led by Ryan, is going to come up with a more extreme budget than I think is going to be acceptable to American people. Fortunately, the Senate will try to tame it in and bring it in. Good chance that they won't be able to compromise. That is to say, they won't be able to put together the numbers that work. And what happens then is the government operates on a continuing resolution where what you say is, we haven't figured out how to make a new budget. We'll keep the old budget for another 3 months or 6 months until we can reach an agreement.
Well, I want to thank you very much, Joseph Stiglitz, Nobel Prize-winning economist, Columbia University professor, chief economist for Roosevelt Institute, served as chair of the Council of Economic Advisors under President Bill Clinton, author of numerous books, most recently, The Euro, how a common currency threatens the future of Europe. This is Democracy Now! When we come back, the I word, impeachment. Stay with us. Here on Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. On Capitol Hill, former CIA Director John Brennan testified to the House Intelligence Committee Tuesday, describing how he'd grown concerned last year about possible collusion between the Trump campaign and Russian officials ahead of the 2016 presidential campaign.
I encountered and am aware of information and intelligence that revealed contacts and interactions between Russian officials and U.S. persons involved in the Trump campaign that I was concerned about because of known Russian efforts to suborn such individuals. And it raised questions in my mind, again, whether or not the Russians were able to gain the cooperation of those individuals. I don't know whether or not such collusion, that's your term, such collusion existed. I don't know. But I know that there was a sufficient basis of information and intelligence that required further investigation by the Bureau to determine whether or not U.S. persons were actively conspiring, colluding with Russian officials.
Former CIA Director John Brennan went on to say he was worried the Russians would lure Trump campaign officials into a, quote, treasonous path. Brennan's testimony Tuesday came as the Senate Intelligence Committee issued subpoenas for documents from two of former National Security Advisor General Michael Flynn's businesses. Flynn himself has pleaded the Fifth and refused to comply with a Senate Intelligence Committee subpoena, demanding he turn over documents related to his meetings with Russian officials. Meanwhile, Democratic Congressman Al Green of Texas has announced he's drafting articles of impeachment against Trump. Green first raised the issue of impeachment on the floor of the House last week.
I rise today, Mr. Speaker, to call for the impeachment of the President of the United States of America for obstruction of justice. I do not do this for political purposes, Mr. Speaker. I do this because I believe in the great ideals that this country stands for, liberty and justice for all, the notion that we should have government of the people, by the people, for the people. I do it because, Mr. Speaker, there is a belief in this country that no one is above the law, and that includes the president of the United States of America.
That was Texas Democratic Congressman Al Green on the floor of the House last week. Well, Congressman Green joins us from Washington, along with John Boniface, co-founder and president of Free Speech for People, one of the organizations that launched the Impeach Donald Trump Now campaign just moments after Trump's inauguration. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Congressman Al Green, let's begin with you. Why have you stepped out as the first person calling for Donald Trump's impeachment?
Thank you for having me on, Amy. This is something that I take very seriously. It's not something that I did on a whim. It was after much thought that I concluded that when the president fired the head of the FBI, who was investigating him, the president, and the president went on to say on national TV that he did it because of the investigation. Thereafter, of course, there was some tweeting done that might amount to intimidation. All of these things combined are enough to conclude that the president has committed an impeachable act. It's important to note that impeachment does not mean that the president will be removed from office. The House impeaches, the Senate would have a trial, and then after the trial in the Senate, the president can be deposed and removed from office. I would also add this, if I may. There is a difference between the collusion that is being alleged and the obstruction of justice. The obstruction of justice is clear, perspicuously so. It took place. The president confessed to Mr. Holt that he did it because of the investigation, that the Russian thing was a made-up story. This is enough to impeach the president. I believe all of these other things are important. And when you're assessing your evidence as a trial lawyer, in terms of the hierarchy of evidence, you can have something that you consider primary. This is something that the case is really going to hinge on. And then there are things that you might want to deal with that are secondary, other things that can be tertiary and quaternary. But you don't have to have all of those things. You do have to have the fact that the president, in his own words, said that he was firing a person because he was being investigated.
So you have CNN reporting President Trump asked the Director of National Intelligence, Dan Coats, and National Security Agency Director Michael Rogers to publicly state that President Trump's campaign did not collude with Russia to allegedly influence the 2016 election. According to CNN, the request came after former FBI Director James Comey publicly confirmed in March the FBI was investigating possible collusion between the Trump campaign and Russian officials. Both Coates and Rogers refused to comply with Trump's demand, which they reportedly found inappropriate. Coates also testified yesterday. The significance of all of this, Congressman Green?
Well, this is additional evidence that will support the primary evidence that I've called to your attention. All of this evidence is important. It, in fact, indicates that the president had a great deal of concern. That concern could emanate from the fact that there are things that could be harmful to him. But whether it's ever proven that he colluded or not, whether he is convicted of that is not important when it comes to the obstruction of justice. Important in the sense that it shows additional things. But when it comes to the obstruction of justice, that act was done. And what happens with the collusion is a totally separate occurrence. And I assure you, the president is going to have to come before the bar of justice at some point, which would be the House of Representatives. Now, I don't say that in the sense that he will appear before the House, but there will be an impeachment resolution before the House because any of the 435 members of Congress can file an impeachment resolution with articles of impeachment. I have not relinquished my right to do so. I reserve the right. And at some point, if no one else does it, I will file articles of impeachment against the president.
Some people say, why not just let the special counsel, Robert Mueller, the former FBI director, do his job? Let him do his investigation.
Well, I want to see him do his investigation. That investigation seems to be directed more toward collusion than obstruction of justice. I think both are equally as important. And I think that he should do his job. I do not have an acid test for when the resolution will be filed. I'm just giving an assurance that there will be one filed because the president has obstructed justice. And I assure people also that when it is filed, it will be something that is thoughtful, that has been clearly vetted. I have persons who will be assisting me who are constitutional scholars. So it's not something that's done haphazardly, capriciously, and arbitrarily. It's something done with a great deal of intentionality.
Mm. Congressman Al Green, is it true you've received death threats? I want to go to town hall meeting Saturday, where you played recordings of threatening voicemail messages left for you. Let's go to these two particularly disturbing messages. I want to warn our viewers and listeners, the calls contain graphic racial slurs.
Hey, Al Green, we got an impeachment for you. It's going to be yours. In fact, we even give you a short trial before we hang your ass.
This is another one of the phone calls left on Congressman Al Green's voicemail.
You ain't going to impeach nobody, you f***er. Try it, and we'll lynch all you f***ers. You'll be hanging from a tree. I didn't see anybody calling for the impeachment of your f***er Obama when he was born in Kenya. He's not even an American. So f*** you,
Congressman Green, these you got on your voice message machine?
We did, and they have been turned over to the Capitol Police. There will be an investigation. It is our hope that the persons who perpetrated this kind of ugliness will be caught and that they will be properly prosecuted. But I also said at the town meeting, and I will share again now, that this type of effort to intimidate will not stop what we are trying to accomplish. It won't thwart our efforts one scintilla. We will move forward. And I am concerned about my staff. We have a lot of young people that work in our office. We have an intern that's still in high school. And persons making these kinds of harmful threats, literally saying they will murder me, these things create a good deal of concern for my staff. So we're going to do all that we can to protect ourselves, but we assure people that we will continue to move forward. And finally, I really want to make this point. This had to be exposed because you cannot hide hate. Mm-hmm. If you hide hate, hate will grow and fester. Hate becomes emboldened. So you have to expose it. You also have to expose it so that the American people can know that people of color live with this kind of behavior, that is not something that we have to assume won't be perpetrated upon us. These are ugly statements, but it doesn't matter whether you are the CEO of a major corporation or a member of Congress. People in this country, some, not all, believe that they can intimidate you by threatening to lynch you. One more thing. The calls in support far outnumber the hateful calls. They far outnumber those who would perpetrate invidious discrimination. And I want to emphasize this because I believe in America. I really do believe that my country, the country I was born in, the country I love, I salute the flag, I believe that this country is moving in the right direction. There are some bumps in the road, but we're moving in the right direction. I believe that we still believe in liberty and justice for all. I believe we still believe that this is a country where all persons are created equal. So I think we've just got to deal with these issues. We cannot hide them. They have to be exposed. But I still am grateful to be in this great country.
Congressman Al Green, I want to thank you for being with us. John Boniface is also with us, Free Speech for People. John, you came on Democracy Now! Like within a week of the inauguration, calling for the impeachment of Donald Trump. How have things changed? You focused on violations of the Emoluments Clause at the time. Explain what your concern was with that, and is that still what you feel is grounds for impeachment?
Amy, thank you for having me. I'm honored to be on with Congressman Green and with you this morning. We have launched this campaign with Roots Action on the day of the inauguration at ImpeachDonaldTrumpNow.org. More than 1 million people all across the country have called for this impeachment investigation in light of the president's direct and ongoing violations of the anti-corruption clauses of the Constitution. His refusal to divest fully from his business interests placed him on a collision course with the Constitution from the day he took the oath of office. But we have since expanded the grounds for our call for an impeachment investigation to include obstruction of justice in light of the shocking revelations that the president fired the FBI director to try to stop a criminal investigation that may incriminate him as well as other associates in his campaign. Congressman Green is an American hero. He's standing up for our Constitution and our democracy at this critical moment in our history, and we're urging people all across the country to join us at ImpeachDonaldTrumpNow.org to stand with him and to make sure that this president be held accountable via the impeachment process.
So how does this move forward right now, John Boniface?
I think it's incumbent upon all of us all around the nation who believe in our Constitution, in the rule of law, and democracy, that no one, not even the president of the United States, is above the law, that we stand up, that we stand with Congressman Green, that we call on our members of Congress to join him in making this call to issue an impeachment resolution to start the process in the United States House of Representatives. I know there are people who are saying, well, we need to get the facts out. And we do need to get the facts out. But as Congressman Green has eloquently stated, we already have these facts. They're talking about getting other facts. The facts are out on obstruction of justice. The facts are out on the violations of the anti-corruption clauses of the Constitution. And we're dealing right now with a constitutional crisis in which this president is openly defying the rule of law in our Constitution. So people all across the country need to stand up. Nine communities, including the Los Angeles City Council, have already passed resolutions calling on Congress to take this action. Brookline Town Meeting in Brookline, Massachusetts, is going to vote this Thursday on this question. And many other communities in the weeks ahead will do that as well. And people can go to our site at impeachdonaldtrumpnow.org. They can download a local resolution and have it passed in your community. Hold an impeachment town hall, as Congressman Green did this past Saturday, and get your community talking about this critical question of our time. This is about our Constitution. It's about our democracy, and we all need to stand up.
Congressman Al Green, have Republicans come to you in support? Any of your any of the Republican Congress members?
Well, I've had Republicans to say to me that they oppose these ugly things that have been said. I have not had any Republicans to tell me about the resolution that I'm proposing or the impeachment effort. And that's because I have not asked. I have intentionally not approached colleagues on this issue. This is a question of conscience for me, and I hope that my colleagues will approach it as I have, but I will not ask anyone to do this. I'm not lobbying anyone. I have concluded that this has to be done. And my hope is that others will see things similarly. But if they do not, I will understand. I think the people of the United States of America, as John has indicated, have to get involved. It's a participatory democracy. If the people will advance their will, the will of Congress will be advanced.
The Hill has reported that Congress member Justin Amash of Michigan, Republican, admitted Trump may have committed an impeachable offense if he asked FBI Director James Comey to drop the FBI's investigation into Flynn. Amash is at least the second Republican openly to say Trump may have committed an impeachable offense. Also, Republican Congressman Carlos Curbelo did, from Florida, said this on CNN last week. Your thoughts on this, Al Green?
Well, thank you, Amy. I think a good many people see the obstruction of justice. And a good many people understand that obstruction of justice is impeachment. I think it's beneficial that three members of the Republican Party have given these indications. But I also understand that there are a good many members who will be silent until given the opportunity to vote. And at that point, they will voice their opinions. My hope is that they will have heard from enough of their constituents so that they better understand the will of the people. I think the will of the people will prevail. It's just a matter of making sure people understand what the issues are. And finally, this on this question of others. I believe that others who desire to speak up will have the opportunity to do so as more things come out, as there's more evidence presented. I think that we haven't seen the last of this evidence that is ultimately going to be presented. But I also know that we already have enough to impeach because of the firing and because the president confessed on national television that he did it because of the investigation.
Well, Texas Congressmember Al Green, John Boniface of Free Speech for People, thanks so much for joining us. We'll continue
Thank
to
you,
follow
Thank you.
Your actions on the floor of the House, Congressman Green, and this whole impeachment movement around the country. This is Democracy Now! When we come back, we'll go to London to speak with Tariq Ali about the suicide attack at the Manchester Arena. Stay with us. Is it love?
When you walk out that door, don't you come back no more.
Me Lonely by Ariana Grande, and a shout-out to Al-Ghazali School, who is visiting Democracy Now! Today. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. As we turn to Britain, where nearly 4,000 soldiers have been deployed to support local police departments in the wake of the suicide bombing that killed 22 people and injured dozens at a concert in Manchester Monday night. The victims were mostly young girls and parents who'd taken their daughters to the concert by the American pop star Ariana Grande. Authorities have identified the bombing suspect as Salman Abedi, a 22-year-old British man whose parents emigrated from Libya. He lived just miles from the stadium that hosted Monday's concert. Abedi's name first appeared in the press after it was leaked by U.S. officials to journalists, even though the investigation was still unfolding. British authorities say they don't believe Abedi acted alone in carrying out the bombing. Police have reportedly detained four people in Manchester as part of the investigation. ISIS has claimed responsibility for the attack. Prime Minister Theresa May has announced the threat level in the U.K. will be raised from severe to critical, indicating another attack may be imminent.
This morning, I said that the Joint Terrorism Analysis Centre, the independent organisation responsible for setting the threat level on the basis of the intelligence available, was keeping the threat level under constant review. It has now concluded, on the basis of today's investigations, that the threat level should be increased, for the time being, from severe to critical. This means that their assessment is not only that an attack remains highly likely, but that a further attack may be imminent.
Monday's suicide bombing marked the deadliest terror attack on British soil since the 2005 London bombings. It came just weeks before Britain's general election. We go now to London to speak with Tarek Ali, political commentator, historian, activist, filmmaker, author, editor of the New Left Review. His latest book has just been published. It's called The Dilemmas of Lenin: Terrorism, War, Empire, Love, Revolution. Tarek, welcome back to Democracy Now! Talk about the Manchester bombing, the significance, the reverberation right now, and the investigation that's going on.
Well, so far we know very little, Amy, apart from what you've already reported on screen. We don't know whether this 22-year-old suicide bomber was part of a larger group. We do know that the weapons he carried to blow himself up were of a cruder sort. And many people, most serious and seasoned observers of terrorism, are denying that he was linked to ISIS. ISIS, now itself in deep crisis in the Middle East, is claiming any attack or wherever it happens in the world is carried out by one of its own. Basically, very little has been revealed by the British intelligence services so far. There was an initial report saying that they knew his identity and knew who he was, but nothing more has been said. The fact that he is of Libyan descent, was born in this country, and his parents were Libyan exiles, can't be kept unlinked to the war that was waged on Libya, the 6 months bombing carried out by NATO, the fact that that country now is totally wrecked. I mean, we have a pattern. This atrocity happens. We all denounce it. Everyone says 95-96% of the Muslim community is opposed to all this, which is all true. Then people like myself and a few others from the anti-war movement say this is not unrelated to the war on terror that has been going on now since 2001. Every Arab country that's occupied, wrecked, has a consequence in Europe. So we're part of a sort of really vicious now cycle where the wars go on and terror attacks carried out usually by tiny jihadi groups or by individuals, as appears to be in this case, goes on. Very little attention now is paid to the foreign policy link with these things, Amy, and that is a bit worrying, because these things started happening in Europe, the United States, after the involvement of the West in quite a brutal way in what is going on in the Arab world. And the other point to be made is that these terrorist attacks are not confined to Europe. They take place every single day in Iraq, in Syria, in Afghanistan, in Pakistan, and Yemen, Bahrain. So when you have President Trump visiting Saudi Arabia, backing their war in Yemen, backing their war in Bahrain, people feel that the West is colluding with these people. It's got absolutely nothing to do with freedom and democracy.
Speaking Tuesday in Bethlehem, President Trump responded to the attack in Manchester.
This is what I've spent these last few days talking about during my trip overseas. Our society can have no tolerance for this continuation of bloodshed. We cannot stand a moment longer for the slaughter of innocent people. And in today's attack, it was mostly innocent children. The terrorists and extremists and those who give them aid and comfort must be driven out from our society forever.
That's President Trump. Tariq Ali, your response?
Well, the response is fairly straightforward, Amy, that innocents are being killed by United States policies in different parts of the world. There are seven wars going on at the moment. Trump had promised to change course, as we all know, and everyone was a bit surprised. But he's now returned to the normal behavior of an American president. He bombed Syria. He's made friends with Saudi Arabia. It was very entertaining to see Steve Bannon, one of his advisors, trapped in a collection of Arab princes and Arab diplomats in Saudi Arabia. So it's business as usual. We all deplore the loss of lives of innocent people. We do. Everyone does. But we can't have double standards in which we say that someone killed in Europe, their lives are more valuable than the lives being taken in large parts of the Muslim world. And unless the West understands that these double standards provoke and anger more people, it will carry on. How do you stop it? I mean, they're doing all sorts of things in Britain. They've got a prevent campaign to preempt all this. What does it say? It tells school teachers to spy on students. It tells children in schools, if you hear one of your fellow students, obviously Muslim, saying something that is unacceptable, do report him. I mean, asking children and teachers to spy on school students. It's
Tariq,
not going to work.
Couldn't the Manchester model be used? You show the parents, you talk about the children who have died, and use that model for children killed in Yemen, Iraq, Afghanistan. Name the names.
Absolutely. This model should be used. And but the media is not under our control or under the control of most people who want to look at the world seriously and not in a cartoonish way. So, there's already been exterminist talk, wipe them all
Tariq,
out.
We have to leave it here, but we're going to continue the conversation after the show. We'll post online at democracynow.org. Tariq Ali, political commentator. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.